Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and today joining me is Joseph Davis from the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences to talk about the use of empagliflozin in patients with type 2 diabetes and its impact on the development of kidney disease. The cardiovascular results of the EMPA-REG outcome study were first published in October of 2015 in the New England Journal of Medicine, but an analysis of the renal outcomes from this study were not reported until June 2016. Dr. Davis and his co-author, Katie Cardone, wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled "Sweetening the Deal: Effects of SGLT2 Inhibition on Kidney Disease Progression." Joe, thanks for joining me today for the iFormRx podcast.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, Joe, if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the study entitled "Empagliflozin and Progression of Kidney Disease in Type 2 Diabetes" to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
Well, Stuart, this study reports the results of a pre-specified secondary analysis of the EMPA-REG outcome trial, focusing on renal outcomes of patients treated with empagliflozin versus placebo. There was over 7,000 patients in 42 different countries that had type 2 diabetes, established cardiovascular disease, a BMI less than 45, and an estimated glomerular filtration rate greater than 30 mL per minute per 1.73 meters squared. The key renal outcome studied was the first occurrence of incident or worsening nephropathy, which was defined as progression to macroalbuminuria, a doubling of serum creatinine with accompanying eGFR below 45, initiation of renal replacement therapy, or death from kidney disease. The results showed a significant benefit of empagliflozin on incident or worsening nephropathy, and it had an absolute risk reduction of 6.1%, correlating to a number needed to treat of about 17 patients. These results are exciting to us as they suggest that empagliflozin may supplement ACE inhibitors and ARBs in treatment for progression of chronic kidney disease.
So it sounds like you're pretty excited about these results. What do you believe are the key strengths and potential weaknesses of the study? And are there any inherent biases or potential confounders present in the study that you believe may have impacted the results?
So starting with the strengths, we look at the trial design of the EMPA-REG study. It was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, and it was conducted in a large number of study sites. There is also a large sample size, including approximately 4,600 patients receiving empagliflozin and 2,300 patients receiving placebo. Another positive aspect of the study is that investigators were encouraged to titrate glucose-lowering therapy and add cardiovascular medications according to low guidelines. This allowed patients to be optimally treated for their comorbid conditions, and approximately 74% of patients were treated with first-line medications like metformin, and 77% were treated with statins at baseline. So this helps us alleviate the concern that the benefit of empagliflozin seen is due solely to a little bit better control of disease. From a renal standpoint, we're excited that about 80% of patients were on ACE inhibitors and ARBs at the start of the study. This means that the positive effects that we saw with empagliflozin were on top of the current standard of care. When considering the limitations of the study, we should consider the generalizability of the study findings. The study population consisted of primarily white men, and about 70% were Caucasian, and about 70% were males. So this really limits our ability to generalize the results to women or patients of different ethnicity. Another limitation is the lack of power calculations for these pre-specified secondary analyses. Although we did detect differences in the key renal endpoints, there could have been some type 2 errors for the outcomes that did not meet statistical significance. This includes an albuminuria or death from renal disease. Also, the average follow-up duration was about 3.1 years. And since chronic kidney disease is a progressive illness occurring over many years, we'd have liked to see a little bit longer follow-up to determine the effects on progression of disease.
So Joe, many clinicians have expressed their excitement about the EMPA-REG outcome study and the positive impact that empagliflozin had on cardiovascular outcomes in patients with type 2 diabetes who are at high risk for cardiovascular events. But some also have expressed concern that the results are being overly generalized and that empagliflozin is being inappropriately touted as the best second-line therapy for all patients with type 2 diabetes. And similar concerns are being raised about the role of liraglutide and its place in therapy after the positive results from the LEADER study. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are, particularly in terms of renal protective effects. Do you find the data from the EMPA-REG study particularly compelling? And do you consider empagliflozin the best second-line therapy after metformin that should be added before other classes such as sulfonylureas or DPP-4 inhibitors and TZDs? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
I believe that the evidence from the study is compelling enough to warrant its use as a second-line agent after metformin, but it has to be in the right patient. The renal protective effects combined with the cardiovascular benefits seen with the EMPA-REG study are impressive. And empagliflozin seems to be well tolerated, as similar rates of adverse events were seen between the treatment arms. Of course, it's not the perfect drug for all patients, as those who are prone to genital and urinary tract infections or are at risk of acute kidney injury may not be candidates for an SGLT2 inhibitor. The trial demonstrated a lower rate of AKI for those taking empagliflozin than those in the placebo arm. However, the recent FDA warnings for AKI given to the other SGLT2 inhibitors demonstrate that this risk is real and patients initiating the drugs may be at risk. Additionally, concerns for ketoacidosis, bone metabolism, and amputation have arisen with SGLT2 inhibitors. This necessitates proper patient selection and education regarding symptom recognition and the risk of using a relatively new class of medications.
So now I want you to imagine that you've been asked to see a 54-year-old African-American man who was diagnosed with diabetes about 3 years ago and has been taking metformin 1,000 milligrams twice a day. He's obese and has a history of high blood pressure and dyslipidemia, for which he takes enalapril and hydrochlorothiazide, as well as rosuvastatin. He quit smoking 10 years ago, but has a 20-pack-year history of tobacco use. He's married, has 3 adult children. He works for a large auto manufacturer as a foreman in one of their assembly lines, and so he has pretty good health insurance benefits, including a prescription drug plan. His glycemic control has been fair. His most recent A1C was 7.6%, and it's kind of fluctuated between 7.3% and 8.2% over the past year. His blood pressure control has been according to the patient at goal during his last 2 visits, with in-clinic measurements of 138 over 78 and 136 over 80. Your measurement today in clinic is 136 over 76. More concerning, and the reason for the referral to you, is the fact that his serum creatinine has climbed from 1.6 approximately a year ago to 1.8 6 months ago to now 2.1 milligrams per deciliter. And the lab tells you that his estimated glomerular filtration rate, his EGFR, is 51 mils per minute. His electrolytes are all within normal limits. So what additional information would be important to you at this point in order to fully evaluate this patient? And would you consider empagliflozin to be the next best step for this patient, or do you think some other treatment options should be considered first?
So before considering the addition of empagliflozin to this patient's treatment regimen, there's a few things we'd want to get. First, we'd want to gather a comprehensive medication list. We would like to exclude any medications that may be nephrotoxic. We want to see if he's taking anything that can increase his risk for acute kidney injury, like NSAIDs. Also, we're going to assess him for his fluid status, and again, to see if he's at risk for acute kidney injury when starting this medication. Also, we should look at a genitourinary history for the patient and see if he's at increased risk for infection. We can see if he has things like recent complicated UTI history or recurrent infections, or if he has chronic catheterization or any severe urinary retention issues. After we determine that these risk factors are not present, we can move on to considering empagliflozin as a second-line agent. The first issue with suggesting empagliflozin for this patient is that the results of the trial may not really be generalizable to him. The patient population consisted mainly of white males, and they all had established cardiovascular disease. But we may be able to assume that there will be some renal benefit. Another thing we need to look at is the patient's glycemic control. He has relatively good glycemic control this time and doesn't need initiation of an agent that will dramatically decrease his A1C. The expected A1C reduction for SGLT2 inhibitors is moderate. The expected reduction is about 0.5 to 0.8%. Additionally, the patient is also obese, and the modest weight reduction seen with these agents may be beneficial for him. Another thing to consider is the patient's health insurance benefits. From the information, the patient has a relatively good prescription plan, so they may cover empagliflozin. However, they may restrict the formulary to only one of the agents in the class. At this time, we can't generalize the results to the other SGLT2 inhibitors. However, there are ongoing trials, such as the CANVAS and CREDENCE trials, which may provide some data in the future. However, of the biggest concern is the patient's rapidly progressing chronic kidney disease. His renal function has declined significantly within the past year, and we may want to avoid empagliflozin at this time. His renal function has declined despite controlled blood pressure, relatively well-controlled diabetes, and use of the standard of care, which is an ACE inhibitor. Beyond the concerns of addition of an SGLT2 is the patient's metformin. For further treatment, he may require a dose adjustment based on the new FDA EGFR-based guidelines. At this time, the recommendation may be just to monitor the patient's renal function, but in the future, he may require dose adjustments. As far as other agents to treat this patient, there really aren't any that confer a particular renal benefit. So at this time, we have a few options for this patient. One could be a DPP-4 like linagliptin, which doesn't require renal dose adjustment, or we could even go with insulin as it's easily titrated for the patient. For this patient, I would probably go with linagliptin as he doesn't really need a major reduction in his A1C. It's given by mouth, and as I said, it doesn't require renal adjustment.
Well, thank you, Joe, for joining us today to discuss the EMPA-REG renal outcome study and the impact of empagliflozin on the progression of kidney disease in patients with type 2 diabetes and who were at high risk for cardiovascular disease. It's clear from your comments that you believe this data is exciting because it showed that empagliflozin had a significant impact on the progression of kidney disease, but there are certain cautions that we should have about this data as well. Empagliflozin clearly isn't right for everyone, and the SGLT2s, we're still learning a lot about them and their potential long-term adverse effects. Well, tell us what you think. Are the observed benefits, both cardiovascular and renal, sufficient to move empagliflozin up in your treatment algorithm, or should its use be limited to a select group of patients? What criteria do you use to pick one treatment over another? Remember, only iFormRx members can leave comments and access our growing list of resource pages. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. Until next time, this is George Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.